As some of us has already discussed a little bit, it starts off, now the main point is this, and I just hope I don't stumble around on what the main point is, but there's a main point being made. If you look back in the preceding verses, the service of Christ and how He serves as our high priest. And we've seen the comparison to Melchizedek, how Christ is of that order and how He is of that type. He is a king and a priest. And He, that type existed outside the law. An argument was made that Melchizedek was, in fact, greater than the Levitical priesthood, since the father of the Jews, Abraham, paid tithes to Melchizedek. And so by equating that to Christ, we understand the point being made is that Christ is also greater. And I guess one thing for me, and a little aside here, I think this remote is not designed for left-handed people, but I'm going to try to do it without breaking it this time. I just needed to take a pause because maybe I stressed too much about what are some of these technical aspects that I'm missing, that I'm not presenting or I'm not explaining. And it's easy for me to get too concerned about the technicalities because there's a lot in Hebrews that is pretty technical and we need to strive to understand that. But let's not lose sight of just the fact that Christ and what He offers is better. And this is something that we presented early and fairly regular for a while about the things that are better, the points that are brought out in Hebrews. And then, of course, we'll see today the emphasis being on the better covenant. Christ is a superior messenger. He was superior to angels. He's superior to Moses. He's superior to the prophets. He provides a superior rest. We just spent a lot of time talking about His superior priesthood. And we'll still talk about that some more. And He provides a superior hope. And, of course, a superior covenant that was enacted or brought into being through the superior sacrifice. And, again, the idea of the superior promise. So, for me, anyway, I just needed to take a minute to just step back and appreciate just how much better. This is what we have. And of course, we're not concerned about, well, you know, I'm being pulled back into Judaism. But the world is always trying to pull us back. There may be influences that are close to us that are trying to pull us in a direction that is contrary to Christ. Are we willing to give up everything that's superior in our life to go back to something inferior? As we'll see in chapter 8, that the coming of Christ, this new covenant, the second covenant, has always been the plan of God. What God has provided in Christ is better than what existed before the law. It's better than the law. And it's better because it was established, as we see, with the only sacrifice that could appease the wrath of God. It's the only sacrifice that allows us and these Jewish brethren to come boldly before the throne of mercy and grace. The priesthood of the old law was inadequate. The covenant was inadequate. Concerning the priesthood, you know, men died. There for a while, the temple was destroyed. There weren't even sacrifices being made. And sort of in context with the letter of Hebrews, under the Roman law, the priesthood and the law is more of a political office. You know, they were teaching the commandments of men. So it really wasn't even as God had intended it or delivered it under the law of Moses. But really, the point is, it was never meant to last. And I think that's what we need to get from Hebrews here in chapter 8. It wasn't meant to last. There was always the plan of God to bring forth something better. The law served a purpose, but it was never meant to last. Any thoughts before we get into our questions? Okay, I think, James, we'll just start with you. I'm losing track of where I'm.
What is the main point of things that we are seeing? Well, I've got the high priesthood of Christ, and I think you've already mentioned some of it. You know, steered everything before.
Right.
It's coming. So.
You want to hit me those other two points?
Oh, sorry. So,
I could spread those out.
Where is he now? He's at the right hand of the throne, the majesty in the heavens. What is he, a minister of the sanctuary of the true tabernacle which the Lord erected and not man?
Right, very good. Yep. Again, verse 1. Now, this is the main point. This is what I want you to understand. This is the important thing. Jesus was innocent, going back into previous verses. He's undefiled. He's exalted above the heaven. He doesn't need to offer sacrifice for his own sins. Christ, the Son, appointed by the oath of God, back there in verse 21, quoting from the Old Testament, to be a perfect high priest forever, to save forever, who serves forever, who serves in the true tabernacle. And the writer is drawing on these arguments, but I think we'll also see that this is the main point. This is the kind of high priest we have. But I think we'll see also that he's also pressing on to the idea that because of this and because of who he is and what he has enacted, we have a better covenant. This is how you are going to live your life now under this better covenant with Christ serving as our high priest. So anybody want to elaborate on the main point? If I missed something there. Okay. Number two.
What must every priest have? Well, there in verse 3 it says he must have something to offer. And why couldn't Jesus be a high priest on earth? I think the surrounding verses explain, even going back to verse 2, he's a minister of the sanctuary of the true tabernacle. In other words, he's ministering in heaven.
Right.
And so, you know, he can't do that on earth. He can't be on earth and still be a minister of the true tabernacle.
Right.
True sanctuary.
Right. Okay.
Also, he could be a priest because he came from the tribe of Levi.
Right. He was of the tribe of Judah. Right. So, on earth, and I think by that he's saying if he was under the old law, if that was still in existence, he would not have been qualified. But as Brian said, he's actually serving in heaven now. He's passed through the heavens beyond the veil, and that's where he served. What was it that the priest, it says they had to have something to offer. What was this? Verse 3 actually tells us. And we're offering gifts and sacrifices for sin. We see in the preceding chapter, this was something that was done daily. Over in chapter 9 really offers a lot for explanation of what we're looking at today. In 9, 11, and 12, but when Christ appeared as a high priest of the good things to come, he entered through the greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is to say, not of this creation, and not through the blood of goats and calves, but through his own blood, he entered the holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. So the priest offered sacrifices. What did Christ offer? Yeah. Sorry, Bob. A sacrifice himself, once and for all, the perfect sacrifice, not something done daily. So the priest had to offer. Christ, as our priest, offered something. He offers himself a much better sacrifice. Any thoughts?
Well,
number three, please.
What do earthly priests serve? They serve a copy and shadow of the heavenly things.
Okay. And under the old law, what was one of the main purposes of the priest, as we've already seen? What did they do?
They served as a conduit between the people and God by having access to God through the tabernacle, through the daily sacrifices, through the periodic sacrifices. That was the only way people could communicate.
Right. Exactly. And I won't even elaborate on that. That was perfect. That's exactly correct. I know it's exactly correct because that's what I have. So what's the idea behind this warning? It talks about this warning to Moses that he was given about building this earthly tabernacle. I think the idea is that he was required to build it exactly as God commanded, that he was to follow a pattern. And that this same pattern is something that we see with Christ. The primary purpose, as Lamar's elaborated on already, the tabernacle and then later the temple was for the people to have somewhere to make offering for sin, these daily sacrifices that were required. But this whole endeavor, the tabernacle, the temple, the law, it says it was but a shadow of the true tabernacle where Christ serves after offering himself as a sacrifice. And again, this is in heaven. He does not need to offer daily because he did not have sin. He once and for all, back in 7 and 27, offered himself up. And again, we need to understand that this was always according to the plan of God. Ephesians 1 talks about it being his eternal purpose. This was always his plan. So which came first, the old law or the law of Christ? That's an easy one. The old law, of course. And I guess, you know, which was enacted on earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. First.
I mean, right. That may be what you're fixing to unpack. I don't want to get
into it. No, you're right. Go ahead.
But the idea of it being a shadow.
Right.
Is how could there be a shadow without something that's of substance?
Right.
Something that would actually cast the shadow.
Right. And I'm going to go with that as well. This idea of shadow versus substance. The old law was always, well, I won't say always, it did point to the better covenant, correct? Galatians talks about that, about being a tutor to bring us to Christ. Now, and maybe I'm off a little bit on this, maybe I'm overthinking it, not trying to come up with something new. But, you know, when I think of shadow and substance, you know, the shadow of my hand, right? The shadow, if you follow it, you link it back to the substance. In looking at this, the idea came to me, and I may be wrong, in that it's just not substance, right? It's not like if you follow the old law, then boom, you've got the law of Christ, which that is the way it came about, but it's just, it is shadow. There's no substance to it. And are we going to serve substance or are we going to serve shadow? Come on. I'm good.
So we've also seen that Moses is required to follow a pattern.
Right.
Well, shadow follows the past.
That's true.
What pattern does it follow?
Of the original.
Of the substance.
Right, the substance. Right.
So, because often we can look at shadow and we can actually identify what the substance. What's casting the shadow?
We can know
what it is casting the shadow.
Exactly. Right. So, and again, it's just, it's not the thing that was intended for to be. And I think, you know, these thoughts are presented primarily to help these Jewish brethren understand that what they're serving is inferior, what or the old law, what they are trying to go back to, is inferior. And it helps us understand as well. There's a benefit for us. Do we appreciate the fact that we have the substance, that this is really what God intended all along? Do we appreciate how much better Christ is than, and then you can fill in the blank, because Christ is better than what? Better than anything, right? Better than the law, better than anything the world has to offer. He's just better. And is, you know, because these things may not mean have the same impact on us about the high priest and, you know, that sort of thing, but do we appreciate that what we have is better? Anybody got any other thoughts on that?
Philip, it's amazing in the so-called religious world that we live. We have listened and heard so many in the so-called religious world. That's true. What's being taught here in verse 4 and 5. In other words, there are those that continue to want to incorporate some of those things out of the old law. And we're combining them us today that are not back. There's been a change. And that's what the writer here is trying to get us to understand now. There's a change that's taking place, or has taken place. But as we look at the so-called religious world today, they could confuse the issues.
Yeah, there's a very big distinction between a change of or in the law versus a change of law. And that's, you're exactly right. There's been a change of law. The whole thing has been replaced. The whole thing has been made obsolete. It served a purpose, but now it has been replaced. Not just adjusted. Sean?
Yes, I'm just kind of probing the shadow a bit more. In verse 5, it says he serves the copying shadow of the heavenly. So when we think about that,
any other thoughts on that?
Philip, I know we don't want to leave Hebrews all together, certainly, but Colossians 2:16 and 17 is very similar terminology. Let no one judge you in food or in drink, or regarding a festival or a new moon or Sabbath, which are a shadow of things to come, but the substance is the Christ. That argument obviously made in other places.
Right. And it's okay to leave Hebrews because I had that very same verse later. But yes, it does very explicitly point that out to us. Exactly. So yes, that passage is extremely helpful, and we'll touch on that again. Appreciate you bringing that up. Any other thoughts on that? And I apologize if my analogy about the shadow is not that good. Any other thoughts?
You know, Philip, I'm thinking about in terms of, you know, like a young man's very interested in marrying this young lady. He doesn't go to the parents and ask for her shadow.
Right. Right. That would, it'd be silly.
No, yeah. I kind of want the real thing.
Right. Yes.
And that, I mean, I know it sounds a little bit silly, but I mean, this is the real thing.
Right. Right. All right, number 4, please.
What did the Lord obtain, according to verse 6, a more excellent ministry because he was the mediator of a better covenant, built upon better promises?
Built on better promises. It's everything, as we've been pointed out, it's based on heavenly things, not the shadow, not earthly things. Very good. And he obtained this, or was given this more excellent ministry, by who? By God. Look back in, he has spoken through his Son, chapter 7 and 21, says, "The Lord has sworn, I will not change my mind, you are a priest forever." So he was given this ministry by the Father. And we've talked about it, but again, just this sort of this idea of just pausing and appreciating what we have. Verse 6, as Deborah mentioned there, he has obtained a more excellent ministry, by as much as he is also the mediator of a better covenant, which has been acted on better promises. So I know our own desires, the living the daily life, things can somehow seem better. Well, if I just go this way, it'll be better. Or if I just stop being a Christian, it'll be better with my family. It's not quite that easy, but at the same time, it is, because we have to appreciate what we have is better. We're giving that up for temporary things that are not better, that offer no salvation. So we just need to remind ourselves that what we have is better. Any thoughts? Okay, number 5.
"For that first covenant had been faultless, with no place of hell, salt or sex."
Right. As we've already talked about, there was a change of the priesthood, therefore there had to be a change of law. Christ could not serve as high priest under the old law. The old law had fault in that it did not provide salvation from sin. As Galatians points out, the law served a purpose, but again, it could not impart life. It wasn't, at least in my opinion, the fault wasn't in the law. And I don't think the fault was in the people necessarily. But what was the fault? And I've already pretty much alluded to that.
It couldn't take away sin.
Yeah, it was inadequate. It never was intended to do what God brought about in the new law, right?
And by extension, that fault was found in the sacrifices. They weren't sufficient.
Right.
The fault was found in the priesthood. Because it turned over, it changed over, they couldn't survive because they would die.
Right.
And the Jewish people knew the impact of that high priest not being, as we talked about this, I think, a couple weeks ago, this high priest was a good high priest. And he looked out for the needs of the people, and then he died.
Right.
And then he replaced him, a bad high priest.
Right.
And he was selfish and did not look out for the needs of the people. So they suffered through the faultiness of the old law in the priesthood not being a pure and better priesthood.
Right. And that should have given them reason to sort of consider that what the whole law itself was faulty, if the administrator, the high priest, had fault himself. So, right, very good. Any other thoughts? Yes, sir.
I just had a thought that went through my mind, and I may not have it serious. But under the old law, the sins were rolled forward, for lack of a better terminology. Instead of under the new law, you have forgiveness for those sins.
And they're not remembered anymore.
Explain, please.
Say that. What am I explaining? Say that again, Brother Billy. What is your question again? I'm sorry.
Under the old law, the sins, they did not have forgiveness like we have under the
Right.
Because they were carried forward, for the lack of better terminology.
Well, because they were not forgiven,
right,
which we have through the blood of Christ,
right,
they would have been carried forward, if you will. Right.
And the blood of Christ had to be offered whereby we could have forgiveness of sins.
Right.
Because He paid that price.
Right.
There's a verse in Hebrews that deals with that, and I'll get back with you in a minute.
Okay, good.
I'll tell you what that verse is.
Lamar's working on extra credit.
Philip, I think right is what he's thinking about in chapter 10, verse 1 and 2, where it says, for the law has a shadow, for having a shadow of good things to come and not the very image of good things, can never, with the same sacrifices, which they offer continually year by year, make those who approach perfect. For then they would not have ceased to be offered. For the worshippers, once purified, would have had no more consciousness.
Yeah, you did good, Brother Billy. You raised him right. All right, very good. Appreciate all that. And you know, maybe it's a sort of a silly analogy, but you know, think about the old law being a treasure map, and then of course you know you got the marker. You know, the treasure is right here. Which do we value, the marker or the treasure? Right? You know, we're not going to pick up that marker and run off with it and go, look what I found. It's just a pointer. And I think that's the idea there behind the old lady. It brought us to something valuable. It brought them to something valuable. It was never intended to be the treasure chest. It was just to get people there.
I can't remember which Bible class teacher I had who would always use the phrase stuck in my head was that the blood of Christ flows forward and backwards.
Right. Which it did. You know, we don't want to give the idea that all those people who served faithfully under the old law were somehow, they didn't make it. You know, yeah. The blood of Christ, and I think you're right, there is indication of that, that it provided salvation for all. Any other thoughts? Right. Very good. Right. Where are we at? Number six? Number six? Right, so there where he says, when I will effect a new covenant, or I will bring into effect a new covenant, by saying, I'm going to bring in a new one, then that makes the old one obsolete. Again, poor analogies, but when we get in our car and we're heading down to the phone store to get a new phone, what does that say about the one that we have in our possession? It's obsolete. It's old. It's going, you know, I haven't quite made that exchange yet, but I'm going to get a new one. The old one's worthless. It's obsolete. It's no more. And that will happen when we get that new one. We, you know, give it to our kids or whatever. But it's by saying there's a new one coming, he in effect said this one is obsolete. Any thoughts? Right. 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 They predicted this, or it was foretold. Yes. Right. Okay. Let's do 7 and 8, please.
Unless
section number 8.
That was the second covenant made with Israel. It was made,
right. Right. Yeah, and again, Hebrews 9 helps us with that. In verses 18 and 19, talking about when the first covenant was made, as has already been mentioned, when they came out of Egypt. But 9:18, therefore, even the first covenant was not inaugurated without blood, for when every commandment had been spoken by Moses to all the people according to the law, he took the blood of the calves and goats with water and scarlet wool and hyssop and sprinkled both the book itself and all the people. So it was inaugurated at that point. And again, the second law, going back up into 14, of chapter 9. How much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God? For this reason, the blood of Christ, for this reason he is a mediator of a new covenant, so that since a death has taken place for the redemption of the transgressions that were committed under the first covenant, those who have been called may receive the promise of eternal life. So again, the idea there of blood. When Jesus was instituting the Lord's Supper, when he presented or offered the cup, what did he say?
This is my blood of the new covenant.
Exactly. This is the blood, this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many. As Brian referenced Colossians 2, just help us understand when the new law came into being. Colossians 2, starting in verse 14, having canceled out the certificate of debt consisting of decrees against us, which was hostile to us, and he has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. When Christ died on the cross. When he had disarmed the rulers and authorities, he made a public display of them, having triumphed over them through him. Therefore, no one is to act as your judge in regard to food or drink or in respect to festival or new moon or Sabbath day, things which are a mere shadow of what is to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. So, very fitting to what we're talking about with shadow and substance. The first law was not perfect. It could not make man perfect. It was a shadow. It was a copy. And I think in that sense, it was faulty. And the new one offers much, much better. Any thoughts on that? Okay, let's do 9, please. They did not continue in it, and God said, you know what, that's okay. That's kind of tough. I understand. What did it say there? They did not continue in it, in my covenant, and I did not care for them. God did not continue to provide his care for them. And if we do not continue in the new law, God is going to remove his care from us, in that we will not enter his rest. We will not be able to partake of the better hope, the better promise. Everything you have in Christ is better. Well, we're going to go back to serving the old law anyway. And I think maybe in context of some of this, one thing the writer is trying to get them to say by quoting some of these passages is, well, your ancestors couldn't keep the law anyway. And really, by extension, you're not keeping them as well. So if under the old law, the commandments have been followed faithfully, does that mean then there would not have been a need for a second?
Still a
fault. Right, yeah. It's still a shadow. It's still faulty. Its design is...
The best best execution of the law is the
right. Right, exactly. So, just want to make sure we understand that perfect law keeping, and as we see in other passages, that was not even possible. It did not offer forgiveness of sins. It served a role. Any other thoughts on that?
Which makes you think of John the Baptist, the statement made about him, was that the least in the kingdom greater than John the Baptist.
Right. He was under the old law. Right.
You know, Philip, Hebrews doesn't emphasize this maybe as much as some of the other New Testament letters, but you know, there needs to be another covenant too, because we need something that would be available now for all. I was looking back, I think it was last week, at an old article that I had written and had a statement there, "We are no longer under the law of Moses." And I thought, that's a terrible statement, because we never were.
Right.
We never were.
We never were.
That was exclusively for that one nation.
Right.
And so, in other words, for you know, something to be available to all, something that all can be subject to, we need something new.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I know Hebrews doesn't emphasize
that
aspect. That's all part of it.
Yep. Good point. Any other thoughts? Number 10. And all will know the Lord. It's no longer going to be primarily about rites and rituals and regulations, which was the big emphasis under the old law, and it's going to be more spiritual in nature. It's in our hearts and in our minds. So how do we know that this new covenant, the covenant we are living under, one that should be in our hearts and minds, how do we know that it is? I was thinking about this, and I thought about with the meeting we had with Kyle just recently, and him talking about how he was enlightened to the truth, and when he was trying to share it with family and friends, and you know, he just met with such disapproval and with rejection. And I think there's this culture in religion, and I think this culture with the Jews, and with maybe even the denominational world around us, that just says, you know, just accept what you hear and just go with it. And I remember Kyle talking about having read a lot of the Bible, having read a lot of verses, but after his eyes were opened to how much more meaning it had to him. It wasn't just a surface knowledge, and I think that's one of the things, you know, there's this surface knowledge that we can read and be maybe intellectually aware of, but is it in us? Are we trying to come to know the love of God? Are we letting Christ dwell in our hearts? If it's in our hearts, okay, we're good. It's in our hearts, and that's it. Is that where it ends? If it's in our hearts, what? Pardon? Yeah, if it's in our heart, then it's going to come out in our actions, right? And if we're not living it, if we're not doing something, then I would suggest that it's really not in our heart in the first place. It's just a convenience. If we're not being compelled to do something, then I don't think it is. We're just following the habits. We're just going through rites and rituals like they did under the old law. We ought to be a people zealous for good works. What's in our heart comes out, right? It does. Whether it's good, bad, whatever. If it's in our heart, it's going to come out. So if we're not doing more than just following the rites and regulations, then maybe it's not as deeply in our hearts as it needs to be.
Before we answer the last question,
go ahead.
I want to emphasize one of the key verses of chapter 8, verse 12. "For I will be merciful for their iniquity, and I will remember their sins."
Yeah. Yep. Unlike under the old law, sins were continually remembered. Yep.
Sean, we're trying to get to read on in verse 3 of chapter 10. It states that But in those sacrifices, there's a reminder of sins every year.
Yep.
So the fact that they had to do them was their reminder. Now, there is no remembrance.
And we don't have that, right? Our sins are forgiven. God remembers against us no more. What a great benefit. And just the point on, is it just in our hearts? But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? We are to love in deed and in truth, not just word. Right? So, what's in our heart will come out. And if nothing's coming out, we need to take a little closer look at what's in our heart. All right, number 11. That was when it actually became obsolete, and when God said, hey, I've got a new one coming, that really, you know, in a very summation there in verse 13, says the old one's obsolete, the new one's coming. Again, the analogy of technology, there's new versions, there's new updates. This is not just a fancier phone. This is not something that's going to give you more memory. This is a once and for all covenant that will never need an upgrade. It stands forever. Any thoughts? We got about a few seconds, a minute. Anything else?
You know, so often we see about Jesus being better in every respect. It's not like he wins by numbers.
Right.
You know, it's not a photo finish. Well, after further examination, it looks like Christ is just a little bit better. No, it's just, unfathomable.
Yeah, think about Revelation, the battle, Satan and his armies come against Christ and his armies, and then it's just over. There's no protracted battle, it's just over. Yeah, good point. Exactly.